Episode 134 of the TV Dudes Podcast, recorded May 25th, 2017. Dear Upfronts, people.
I feel like this is kind of an open letter kind of podcast.
Oh, yeah?
This one, yeah. Because, dear Upfronts people, I mean, the name is because we're going to talk about the Upfronts, network Upfronts. We're also going to talk about Dear White People on Netflix, which is a great show. Spoilers, we liked it. And, but the reason Dear Upfronts people works as an open letter title is because I have a list of grievances for people who put together trailers for Upfronts.
I don't know what they're doing, but it's saccharine garbage usually, and it doesn't seem to ultimately fit the tone of whatever they're trying to sell.
When we get to it, yes. I have a few suggestions for them.
And
a few.
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that I kind of hope that you're going to pull a list out of your pocket of letters you cut out of magazines. Grievance number one.
No, that's
like
the letter.
Fucking ransom letter?
Ransom note,
that's
yeah.
The letter I sent to the networks. But now if they listen, they'll know it was me. I went to all that trouble.
Thanks a lot, actually. Thanks a lot.
This is literally why we can't have nice things.
Doxed Randy.
This is why we can't kidnap people either. This is what happened.
Well, that and I drive a 2-door Honda Civic, yeah. But it'll die one day and then I'll get that hatchback.
I feel like a hatchback is the worst for kidnapping someone.
No, you just pop it open, they go right in, close it down.
But it's so open-ended, they could just like hop into the back seat from there.
That's true. That's true.
And I presumably overtake me, because it wouldn't take much to overtake me
You have to use chloroform.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm taking notes.
Use chloroform.
And I'm cutting out notes letter by letter onto my creepy thing. It's how we all take notes.
It's a really weird letters. Way to take notes. It's very time consuming.
This escalated quickly.
Hey, folks. Yes. So we are going to be talking about Dear White People over on Netflix. And because we're all over the place on how much each of us did our homework, namely me, I dropped the ball. We're going to be talking about The Leftovers, but we're going to leave some of these other shows for next week. Hopefully I have more time to watch TV next week. But before all that, we're also going to be talking about the Upfronts, because they're here. They came out last week, and we didn't have time to like review them all before discussing on last week's episode. But that's okay. We got them now, and we're gonna tear them up, like Randy said.
Everybody knows what the Upfronts are, right?
They do.
And it's a TV podcast. They gotta know what the Upfronts are.
You can
explain
them again.
So the Upfronts are where the networks present their upcoming new shows and trailers for their returning shows, basically for advertisers, so that the advertisers can determine what they want to spend their hard-earned money on, trying to convince you people to buy things. And these days, it also goes out to the critics, so the critic can prejudge shows harshly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we're going to do.
For example.
Before we get into all that, we are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
I'm Ashley.
And there's a couple ways you guys can support us if you're liking what you're hearing. First up, iTunes. Go and give us a 5-star rating, write a review. That helps us out, gives us visibility. Another way to help us is over at patreon.com. There you can make a per-episode pledge, and in exchange you get bonus-exclusive content. It's kind of a sweet deal, and I don't know what we're going to discuss this week. We're going to have to figure that out. But
we'll come up with something.
It'll be something juicy.
Okay.
Sorry, that's weird.
That was weird.
The weirdest part is that he winked.
It's not a video podcast. Why did I wink? That was just for you two. And those are the only two ways. But I will say that we got a generous new donation from our listener, Jacob Elsner.
Would you say that that's a third way to support the show?
Yes, you can do a direct donation if you would like. You can Patreon us at admin@thetvdudes.com if you are so inclined, and it's very much appreciated. Wait, you weren't going to do something weird?
Well, there is a fourth way you can support us.
Fourth way!
There's a little bit of video out there on the internet. There's a video of me dancing in joy about the Terriers coming back.
Mm-hmm.
There's a video of you dancing on a car.
Yeah. This exists.
I don't know how much video there is of Ashley.
I destroyed those videos.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it was back in the 70s before you could put things on the internet.
So you're going to have to get on Ashley's Facebook or Twitter and steal some steel pictures of her. But my assignment to you people this week is you need to make an Upfront video.
Yeah.
For the TV Dudes.
Oh, man.
I need you to go watch some of these Upfronts and then make a coming this fall, the TV Dudes podcast, find either some schlocky music or an outdated pop anthem. Put it in there. Tell the whole story of an entire episode.
We just need to play like Salisbury Hill 3 times.
Yes,
I think.
Yeah. So that's you could promote us by making a TV Dudes upfront video.
Okay, sweet. And we might have to do that ourselves.
Yes, we might have to do that.
All right, well, let's move on from there, because we also want to remind you guys once again that this month we are promoting on our Permanent Record Network.
Permanent Record.
That there's different podcasts that we have that cater to all of your TV sensibilities. And this month we are promoting FemTV, which is our buddy Melissa Garamonti, who's actually coming down from Canada in I think a week and a half for...
I know. I'm excited to see her again.
TV Fest. Yeah. Be cool. But she does a podcast every so often that is tackling women in the TV industry. It's a great listen, and you can check it out at femtvpodcast.com. Go to femtvpodcast.com/subscribe and subscribe today. Kind of tripped over my words there.
It's all right. Nobody noticed until you called it out.
Everyone noticed. They went back and listened to it over and over. They're like, that Grant. Like, why is he in podcasting? He can't speak.
Like the Zapruder film, but with audio.
He's a fucking mess, that guy. All right, let's go on to our listener, our questions from you, the listeners. Aww. If you guys like us on Facebook, we put up a little post once a week. And our first question, gotta go to Nick Thighs.
All right.
And he says, TV Revenge Update. Nick is our buddy over at the UGO podcast, and he's been giving us a long and winding, initially Game of Thrones themed, revenge update between him and his roommate. And here's where the chapter picks up.
By the way, Nick's about to spoil all the season finales of all the CW shows. For those of you like me who are behind on all the CW shows, just a warning.
So if, as I'm reading, Randy, you know a point where you should squawk to block whatever I'm saying, please feel free to.
I don't. I'm so far behind. This is all going to be news to me.
TV Revenge Update. After watching the finales of the CW superhero shows, I've decided to prank my friend superhero style. I'm going to arrow, in quotes, him by making him do an activity with his most hated enemy that's surprisingly willing to team up with him for an undefined reason.
That's every season.
Yeah. Is that a spoiler? Yeah. I'm going to flash him. Whoa. We know what that means. By trapping him in his room as penance for whining about a big mistake he made for an entire year. Get over it, man.
That's also every year of Flash.
I am going to Supergirl him. Whoa. By making his girlfriend, who he has a painfully little chemistry with, break up with him so I can ship him with another character that would actually be more interesting.
Okay, I lied. He's not spoiling anything. This is actually true for all these shows.
And I'm going to Legends of Tomorrow him by covering his room in dinosaurs, I guess. I don't know what that show is. It's weird. He says, what CW superhero show did the TV Dudes think had the best finale?
So,
uh-oh.
As noted, confession time. We're all like, I'm super behind. Ashley, do you watch any of the CW superhero shows?
I have seen a few seasons of The Flash and the first season of Supergirl. I like them both a lot, but I'm obviously woefully behind.
Yep. Me too. And granted, things, you know who's not behind? Les.
I was going to say Les. He knows everything.
Next week, when we have Les on, we'll ask this question again, because Les, I'm sure, is up on all the CW shows.
We will only ask it again if you ask it again to us, because otherwise we're going to forget.
That's actually true.
But I'm just going to go ahead and say Legends of Tomorrow was the best one, because it doesn't cost me anything to say that.
Sure. Yeah.
I have no integrity. Zach McLernan asks, an interesting idea was recently put out by Dan Harmon via his YouTube channel Wisecrack, that TV writing is inherently different from movie writing, in that while movie writing encourages a character to confront change and grow, you know, the hero's journey, traditional TV writing is designed to encourage the character to change as little as possible and to maintain the status quo. This is designed to keep the viewer coming back week after week, as well as to engender an easily accessible narrative to a wider audience. This is also why TV encouraged single one-off stories each episode via a single arc. So do you feel shows follow this, like Harmon states that he and Roiland write all of Rick and Morty this way, or do you feel TV writing has evolved to something new?
It feels weird for me, amateur TV critic, to contradict someone who's one of the big TV writers, but I think he's completely off base here.
Do you?
Yeah. TV writing used to be all about the formulaic. I mean, maybe I'm just not looking at network TV, which I'm in general, but outside of like network TV, I feel like that's not the point of TV anymore. Like the whole point is to change the characters and to have them develop into something new. And
well, I mean, I think what he's saying, I would agree with, because TV is about advancing plot more so than advancing, doing character development week to week, episode to episode, rather.
Right.
You want to have the character evolve through a season, but not necessarily through an hour of television. So it is going to be a much slower paced development of the individual characters, because you want that constant frame of reference. Whereas in a movie, you're trying to tell a complete end-to-end story, and that's why you have that arc. That's why you oftentimes will have a longer time span that kind of takes place within a movie than like
I guess I see what you're saying, but that's just the difference in format, because the 13 episode TV series is going to be the same arc as a 2 hour movie, right? It's just a different time space.
Yeah, but that's kind of the point. When you're writing an episode of TV versus a movie, you're actually not trying to have the character evolve.
That's reasonable, I guess. Yeah, the notion being the episodes or the arcs are going to be smaller, and it's. But I think maybe I'm misunderstanding, but it seems like what he's saying is it's all about keeping the status quo, and I still don't think that's true.
Well, in comedies, that's generally the rule of thumb, because you want to be able to, define them into like you're this type of character, and this is how you're going to play off of this type of character.
That's true, but you look at comedies like Brooklyn Nine-Nine has changed its status quo numerous times.
True.
You know, they keep changing up who's, you know, they have things like Terry taking the start, going back into the field.
Yeah, but they're all in the same office together.
Yeah, all in the same office together. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to some extent, some of that is built into the format.
It's not like Mad Men, where people are constantly coming in and out and growing and changing. Yeah. Like, that's a show that's really also trying to drive character change.
Like the season where Don Draper became a 90-foot tall lizard.
Yeah, that was a weird one.
He was growing and changing.
All right, let's go to the next question, I guess. Paul Manpilli says, so I have a confession. I hardly watch TV, but I love listening to your show because of your chemistry and your passion. Wow, thanks, dude. Do you have similar feelings about TV programs? You have no interest in the topic story, but you love everything else about it. So I guess, is there a show where you're like, I don't really care about motorcycle culture, but I can't stop watching Sons of Anarchy's crazy characters because it's so over the top.
That was a weirdly specific example.
I don't know. I mean, I can't think of an example. What is there?
Ashley, any shows you've watched where like the subject matter doesn't appeal to you, but you like it regardless?
I'm trying to think.
I've usually got to be interested. Although, you know what my example is? Friday Night Lights. I could give two shits about high school football in Texas.
Yeah, but you love high school kids.
Yeah, and the stories, I feel like it's pretty fun.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
So does it just have to have like a subject matter that isn't like my favorite? Or
is there like subject matter seems like a thing. If there was a show like you're like, I would never have watched this except I got drawn into the characters and the stories. Because that was Friday Night Lights for me.
Yeah, it's not like, I mean, I think that's the case with a lot of shows. It's not like I love the idea of the administrative ins and outs of a Parks and Recreation department.
I actually do love that. That was that's my favorite thing. I go into the Parks and Rec department of Austin.
Do you watch like C-SPAN, Parks and Rec?
No.
A collection of pamphlets. They're all organized in his closet. He reads them alone by the light of a single candle.
You're that guy.
Yeah, that's me.
That's actually really adorable, although it is a fire hazard. As one of your pamphlets no doubt points out.
You know what? I don't, the fire inspector, I find that guy boring. I would not watch his show.
I would watch his show. It sounds hot.
Oh boy. I love it. Love it. All right. Charles Armstrong says, is it just me or is this season of Fargo less engaging than the previous two?
I will fight you.
Before I would watch the episode the night that it was released in great anticipation. But for season three, I'm content to just wait a few days before watching.
I'm not watching Day of, but that's just because I'm so busy with other stuff.
Are you watching the day after?
Yeah, pretty much. But not always.
I'm like three or four episodes behind and kind of agree with him that I'm like, I don't feel the pull of this show. I hear it's getting better and better like as it's going along.
Oh, man.
But I don't know. There's something about it that it's just a little bit too slow.
I completely disagree. I think this season's been amazing. I've been really into all the stories. I'm also mildly in love with Mary Elizabeth Winstead. That might be part of it.
The Americans does the same thing to me.
Now, The Americans, I haven't watched beyond episode one this season.
Right? It's just one of those where I'm like, I'm going to binge through it at some point, and I'll be better off there.
But the thing with The Americans for me is that it's such a heavy watch that it's just like, when I have a little bit of time, I don't want to watch an episode of The Americans because I'm just going to be depressed and horrified.
Yeah.
And so I tend to lean on, like, I'll watch Veep and Silicon Valley first, even though I'm a Fargo fan first, because Veep and Silicon Valley are an easy watch, and Fargo, like, requires undivided attention and is more serious. And the same thing's true for, like, The Americans, some of those.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's anything about the quality of the show. I think Fargo season 3 has been great.
Well, Dennis McElwain says, what shows are you sad ended that you have not been talking about? Like, either, I guess, on mic or off mic. He says, also, we should bump Braindead to the top of our must watch when we have time pile.
Braindead is on my list. See aforementioned crush on Mary Elizabeth Winstead, but also because I've heard it's great.
I don't even know what Braindead is.
It was a CBS show about brain-eating parasites taking over politicians.
Oh.
It was satire, political satire.
It was canceled or something?
It was just a one-season show.
Oh.
I mean, I guess they might have done more, but it sounds like they're not going to. But it's on Amazon Prime.
So Beach Cop Detective Season 2 is what you're saying?
Yes. Beach. No, that's not what I'm saying. We're never... No. No. But the show I'm sad ending, though, we talked a little bit, is Pitch. I was kind of sad to see Pitch go.
Eh.
You weren't
even watching it.
I was watching it. I watched all of Pitch.
You watched every episode?
I watched every episode.
I thought you stopped halfway.
There were only like 7.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
I watched every episode of Pitch.
There were only 7 episodes and then they got canceled.
They got canceled.
Eh.
I don't know. Pitch was a slickly produced network show that they don't do very well with that kind of thing. So I was like, oh, good for you. You have a show I don't hate.
Did we talk much about Lone Star back in the day? Lone Star was fascinating.
Yeah, it was. I don't know if I watched all of that one.
Lone Star and Awake. I was kind of getting into Awake.
I did not like Awake.
Both of them are by, what's that dude's name?
Kyle Kinane?
That's a comedian, I think.
Yeah.
Kyle Killian?
Kyle Killian.
Maybe. Sure. We don't know his name.
We don't remember his name.
But yeah, Lone Star was this guy who was leading a dual life, and he was married to like an oil tycoon lady.
Yep.
And in like his other life, he was like this little small country bumpkin guy married to a country girl.
And I can't remember who the lead was, but I know Adrian Palicki was one of his wives, and I love her.
The lead was Bob Benson from Mad Men.
That's right, because I remember it was somebody good.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
Yeah,
it was just like it was really well done. It had great intrigue in the cast, and yeah, it was kind of bummed it didn't really last very long.
It was too weird for network audiences.
Yeah, was there something in particular, Ashley, that you were like?
You know, not really. I am overwhelmed with so much good television these days. Yeah. That it's not like I want to see, especially of the shows I watch regularly, I don't want to see them end. But I have so much coming in through the fire hose that I'm actually generally okay when I finish a season these days.
Yeah.
Is there a show you'd be sad to see go? Like if they were to say, oh, we're canceling this show. I mean, Game of Thrones, obviously. We'd all be sad to see Game of Thrones go. But is there a show you're like, oh, I'd legitimately miss that one?
What would I be sad to
miss? I know Grant has one.
Leftovers is bittersweet for me, actually.
Are you ready for them to have a good, solid ending?
I'm kind of glad that they are going to be ending.
Okay, all right.
Because, you know, he gets to end it on his own terms. He's building up to something. And I think that's just the way to go. It's 3 solid seasons.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess most of them are pretty obvious. Like, I mean, I obviously want to, like, Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff, but...
If this was the last season of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, would you be sad?
I would be. I really like that show, and I watched all of the season 3, and I really liked it a lot.
Yeah,
I thought
it
was
fantastic.
Great.
Were you sad when 30 Rock ended, or do you feel like it was at its point, that like
you know,
it probably needed to go?
I was sad, but I kind of felt like... In the last season, they did a really good job of joking about how they're starting to get into a loop that they can't break out of. Maybe a little bit of what Dan Harmon was saying in his critique of television writing.
Yeah.
Then once you get to like season 7, season 8, maybe it's good to go out on a high note.
Yeah.
The Office.
Yeah, The Simpsons. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, yeah.
At this point, I feel like if the Simpsons ends... Probably it's like the end of Western civilization. Like that's a bellwether at this point.
Oh,
like I don't want to watch it.
Hold on, Simpsons.
But I'm just saying. I'm just saying it's been on for so long. We don't know what's going to happen if we turn it off. It's like The Island. We don't know what it does, but we need to push that button.
Simpsons is the donkey wheel you don't turn.
Yes.
It's just let it do its thing.
By the way, if we didn't already have a name for the episode, that is the name for the episode.
The Simpsons, donkey wheel?
Simpsons is the donkey wheel you don't turn.
We'll make note of that. All right. Kobe Clark says, hey, dudes, I'll keep it short. How the hell did Seth MacFarlane do Star Trek better than CBS? I'll give CBS a little credit. They made boring look pretty.
Oh, that's harsh.
Yow.
I'll give Seth MacFarlane a little credit. He made unfunny look pretty. Because the Orville does not look very good to me, but it looks good.
it looks brighter and the like more colorful, kind of what you want.
The costumes, the ships, the set, I think that all looks good.
Yeah.
The jokes look kind of lazy.
But yeah, the writing looks terrible.
Yeah, it looks lazy, but...
But, you know, looking over at the Star Trek one, it was just kind of like bleak. It was like...
Yeah.
It's like, wow, this is pretty dark and grim looking.
That said, it looks a little too like J.J. Abrams' Trek for me, but at the same time, I still think it looks good. It looks better than I expected, honestly, after all the delays it's had, so we'll see.
Well, Alec Miracle asks, and I'll take this as a pointed question to me, what was your favorite episode of Lost from each season? I'll go ahead and rattle this off real quick for you. The pilot episode of season one, it's brilliant. It's one of the greatest episodes of TV ever. Live Together, Die Alone from season two, the finale. In fact, there's a two-part finale. They do that in most seasons, and most of those are the best. But in season three, Trisha Tanaka is Dead was fantastic. That was a Hurley episode with a lot of numbers, but Through the Looking Glass as well, you know, with Charlie and Penny's Boat.
No cheating.
I'm just torn because, you know, I can't just say the finale for every season. Single season,
that's
right?
True.
The Constant, of course, in season four, which is Desmond's time tripping. It was a beautiful episode. The Life and Death of Jeremy Bentham, which was Locke and his alternate personality thing and the whole thing with him and Ben. Fantastic in season five. And the finale called The End for season six of Lost.
I liked the one where there were a lot of unanswered questions.
Shut your fucking mouth. That was episode one before they answered in all the other episodes. They answered everything.
I like the part where it's like, is he dreaming? Is it a flashback? Are they all on the same island? That episode? That one was my favorite.
I also liked the one where Sawyer said sarcastic things and Jack and Kate stared longingly at each other.
Uh-huh, guys, I am taking my podcast. I'm going home. I am going home.
I like the episode where they say goodbye to that polar bear.
All right. Kyle Volte says, so I watched the first two episodes of Twin Peaks series, and I would ask you guys, does the series have a place in the modern TV landscape, or has the existence of its inheritors like Fargo, Legion, and Leftovers, American Gods, and others filled up that space that Twin Peaks once occupied?
See, this is another question for Les, because he's the guy, I think, who watched Twin Peaks. We're holding off till next week because Les...
Yeah, we are going to be discussing it next week. That's a good question.
Did you watch it, Grant?
I did not.
Did you watch Twin Peaks?
No, I haven't gotten to see Twin Peaks yet.
So, but did you watch the old ones? Did you watch the...
Lots of times.
Did. Okay.
Yeah, I've seen those many times.
So what do you think? Because I'm not a Twin Peaks fan. Like, do you think it still has a place in TV? Oh,
interesting. You are not a Twin Peaks fan.
I tried.
I didn't think I knew any of those.
I tried watching and I couldn't get into it. It was too late because I think if I watched it back when it was originally on, I would have been like super into it.
Oh, so when it first came out, I'm not 73 like you.
Fair.
And so when it first came out, my sister loved it. She's about 7 years older than me. So she was the biggest.
So old.
So
really
yeah,
old.
Yeah, I mean, pretty I mean, old.
Not as old as me.
Not as old as you, yeah. But I mean, I'm getting up there too.
That's like a dog year older than you.
So when it was first on, she was an avid fan, but it used to scare me when I was little. And I had a hard time telling the Northern Exposure intro sequence from the Twin Peaks intro sequence because I was very small.
Uh-huh.
And so I never knew whether or not I was going to have the shit scared out of me. And because my big sister loves me but likes to toy with my emotions, sure, she would keep it a secret. So that was where the first times I saw it was okay, mixed in with Northern Exposure, which made for a very weird memory.
Yeah.
And then I used to watch them like in high school and then watched them more recently in college. Okay. And so, I love them.
So, but do you think like, is there room for more new Twin Peaks? Like, is this a good idea?
You know, I always am a little hesitant when something has such a fandom built around it, mm-hmm, and you try to do it again.
Yep.
It's almost like people are going to inherently be sad.
Yeah, that's
from
true.
It.
Yeah.
So it has to exist in that universe, but do something new with it. But it has to hit all the same beats. And so it's a tall order, right?
Yeah.
And so I definitely think there's room in it for it. And I'm really looking forward to seeing it. I was just in the middle of the desert and couldn't watch it yet.
Right. It seems like the perfect place to watch it, actually.
It really does, doesn't it?
Go to the desert, take some mushrooms, yeah. Watch Twin Peaks.
Yeah, and there's literally no way that could have backfired.
No, I can't see one.
Yeah, me neither. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it. And I also, I really liked American Gods. The first episode I was a little iffy on. But yeah, I think the same crew of people are going to like them probably.
Yeah. It's interesting because I wouldn't have thought Twin Peaks would be one of them would get resurrected. For one thing, it didn't seem like David Lynch would ever go back to TV, but, yeah, I think it has a place. I'm not so sure X-Files still does.
Well, in Twin Peaks ended, it has an open ending, right?
Yeah.
Which I feel like can be explained.
Yeah, and wasn't it like, we'll see you in 20 years, and then they did it?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much, because I think the most recently I've watched all of the Twin Peaks episodes was maybe 5 or 10 years ago, but if I'm not mistaken, I think it, are we talking about how the other series ends? Maybe I shouldn't, or...
I think it's probably, we're past
the point. Yeah, okay, we're past the point. Yeah, it's been a long time. So I think Dale Cooper is locked in the Black Lodge, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I don't know.
I've never seen this.
There's threads, not just because it's a little bit polar bear Miss Monster in its own right, but I think it has open plot points that they could just pick up from.
All right.
So
maybe we'll get another Lost season just to explain, like,
the Twin Peaks
feed shit to you, Randy.
You know what's funny, Grant? I actually think that they probably could do a Lost revival here and pretty soon, and people will be super psyched to see it.
I thought he was going to say your face, yeah. But he didn't.
In your face. Okay, last question comes to us from Jonathan Haftemichael, who says, what character actor could be considered the Kevin Bacon of television? The actor who's connected to every other TV actor by, like, at most 6 degrees. In your nigh-infinite TV trivia knowledge, well, that's high praise, you guys can think of some people.
High praise or a challenge?
It's a challenge.
So, Grant, you threw a name out, which I didn't know, but then I looked him up like, oh, yeah, that guy.
Zelko? I never know how to say the first name. Zelko Ivanek is how I'm going to say it.
Look it up. Even though you don't know that name, you know that guy.
Z-E-L-J-K-O. He's like a bad guy in everything. I swear he was like in V, and he was in...
I think he was Doug Stamper on House of Cards. Isn't that his name?
Not Doug like Stamper, but he looks
just
like...
not the same guy?
No.
That's actually the actor's name?
Yeah. His name's Yelko.
So he's not the same guy?
It's not the same guy.
Oh my God, I thought it was the same guy.
No, but he looks like that guy too.
Okay, I thought
that guy
was
also in a lot of stuff.
I was like, maybe Doug Stamper was the character's name.
No, he was in Heroes for a bit. He's just kind of like a bad guy henchman. You'll see him and you go,
Doug Stamper's one of my answers apparently because I thought it was the same dude. And then I was going to say Garrett Dillahunt because that dude's in a lot of stuff. I mean, he was on Justified. He was on Deadwood as two different characters.
Yeah.
And he's been in a bunch of movies too. So you can connect him through a bunch of stuff.
Paul Mampilli said Munch from Homicide.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's interesting though as well because there's a bunch of actors so you can just branch out from Homicide, him just being on that show.
Yeah.
But also, he's one of those guys that his character has been on other shows, and he is a link that connects like a shared universe of all these different TV shows.
Yeah, there's that whole theory.
So like X-Files exists in the Homicide universe and all that because Munch is the character, same character. Kind of cool. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we'll be back with some upfronts. So we are going to talk about the upfronts, and let's start with ABC, because ABC actually had some of the most episodes, or I guess trailers, for this season. The first one, I believe we all watched this, and it's funny because this is also the first episode of Leftovers Season 3 title, The Gospel of Kevin.
Yeah.
This is starring Jason Ritter. You might remember him from, what was that Lost spinoff that just came out where they can go back and forth in time or whatever?
I don't know which.
Fast Forward, I want to say it's called.
Was it Fast Forward? Was he in Fast Forward?
I feel like he was in Fast Forward.
I thought that was somebody else.
Maybe. I could be wrong.
I don't know.
I should have looked up his IMDb.
You might remember him from something we don't remember him from.
That's so mean.
It was that good.
Okay, but this Kevin is a guy who apparently gets touched by a guardian angel because he's one of the special chosen people.
Not touched in that way.
Yeah, essentially. And he's going to be looked after because he's supposed to be sort of like some new prophet that's going to help bring people together, but he's kind of a fuck up in life. You guys saw this. What do you think?
I know what Ashley thought.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of that movie Michael starring John Travolta where he was a shitty guardian angel. And for some reason, I watched that whole movie. And I was sitting here going, oh my God, I just watched like this whole trailer. And it felt just like that.
You experienced that.
Yeah. I really did. I really did.
Well, I thought that this looked, it's a sassy guardian angel and a down in his dumps shitty person who becomes someone who's going to learn a lesson to become a better person.
You know what I think could have helped this trailer? Saxophone solo.
I agree.
Yeah. I agree. I really think that if ABC doesn't know what else to do with the 3 minutes, a sax solo would help. Oh, hey, I want to watch that movie. Which one are you watching? I want to watch that show.
Also, I think a sassy sidekick would have helped.
It looked like he had a bearded sidekick, dude.
No, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Was he heavy set? Did he have funny hair?
That's true. He did.
Oh,
that's
God. Right. It hurts so much.
You know what? You know what else could have helped? Talking car.
So the next one is Zach Braff is back on TV with Alex Inc.
So this is a bad trailer. I'm not going to lie. It's a bad trailer. But I like Zach Braff.
Mm-hmm.
I like the woman playing his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on Alex Bloomberg's podcast startup that was about him leaving NPR and This American Life and starting up the Gimlet Media Empire, which I actually really like a lot of their podcasts.
Sure.
So I'm kind of curious to see where this goes. I wondered how they were going to turn the story of someone built some sort of a nerdy dude making a podcast network, how they were going to make that visually interesting. And the answer was by changing a lot of shit.
This looks weird and terrible. Like, he's working in some office that makes me... It reminds me of the Robin Williams movie Toys.
That's exactly what I thought of when I was watching it.
Yeah,
yes.
Why am I looking at this? I'm like, what the fuck is this Willy Wonka shit that he's, like, working in? And how does this relate to podcasting? I'm getting so confused by, like, the whole messaging here.
That's got
to
be a network note. I feel like there was somebody at the network who's like, could he work in a toy factory?
But like it's not, it's like it's an imaginationarium or something, but it's like also just like a really boring looking corporate office with just like occasional pockets of bright, colorful shit.
Yeah.
And his kid's a magician. I don't know. Like, it's weird. The whole thing,
it's very
how
weird.
They cut this trailer together.
You know,
and a lot of sound effects, like a lot of sound effects is weird.
Dink.
Comedy pilots are really hard and they're rarely funny. And comedy trailers for comedy pilots are also rarely funny or at all indicative. So I'm holding out a little hope for this one, but not a lot.
Podcasters, you know, starting a podcast network, that's interesting to us.
Yeah, telling a story. I think that a TV show based around a podcast, a group of people making a podcast, would be a great idea. I think people should probably go to the people who have that podcast and give them like TV development money to develop that show.
I like what you're thinking about.
It's sort of like the opposite of that question we got from the listener who was like, is there like a topic or story that you guys have no interest in, but the show looks so good because of the chemistry. You liked it so much.
Yeah.
This is like the opposite.
Yeah,
it's
like, the topic's good. I like the people, but the show looks terrible.
Awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 10 Days in the Valley, I don't know if you guys check this one out, but basically Kira Sedgwick's like a writer and she's writing some true crime shit or maybe like fictional crime.
And a guardian angel
lands. Her kid like gets abducted while she's writing it and there's some parallels to whatever she's writing and bridges she's burned. I don't know. It's definitely a show that is not something I'm ever interested in watching.
Yeah. No, not for me.
It's like a scary version of Stranger Than Fiction or something.
Yeah. Pam from The Office. What's that actress's name?
Jenna Fisher.
She is in a sort of rom-com which has her and her husband getting a divorce, but deciding that they're going to live in the same house, and like he's going to live in the garage on his off days, and she'll live in the garage on her off days.
Where is this base? Is it in California?
It looks like a California show.
Because I think in California, New York, that shit happens.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, them just trying to figure out relationship stuff apart from each other, but the wacky hijinks because they're all together. It just, it looks kind of cliche. Didn't really seem interesting
to me.
That's
too bad. I like her.
Now, the mayor, this was one I was kind of interested in because...
This is the life and times of John Mayer.
Yes, it's about John Mayer. So it's about this this young hip-hop artist. I don't know what little town or city he's supposed to be from.
Raleigh, North Carolina.
Is it Raleigh?
No, I just made one up.
It could be. Anyway, he's an aspiring... like I said, aspiring rapper, and he decides to run for mayor just as a means of upping his profile, getting like marketing himself, and he ends up winning.
Wait.
So
the premise is that someone in the media decides to run for a political office.
Who's unqualified.
Unqualified, just to raise his profile. And then he winds up winning?
Far-fetched, I know.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
We're going to be here a while, folks.
But what if, instead of Trump, it was someone who seems to actually have an understanding
about
problems? Oh,
you're right. That is what Trump was about. You're
and,
right.
Yeah. Obviously. he's going to figure it out with an actually qualified team that helps him out. I don't know.
I liked the
trailer. I do not think I would like a full episode of this.
Yeah, I'm curious. I love a good politics show. I love West Wing, and I loved local politics. The Oscar Isaac's HBO thing that I'm blanking on right now.
The Night of?
No.
Oh wait, Oscar Isaac. Oh
yeah.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about, right? The one was like about the real...
yeah, with David Simon.
Yes.
The housing
thing. I can't believe I'm blanking on it. It was really, really good. Oh, Show Me a Hero.
I need a hero.
Yeah, that's probably the trailer that...
I think it was called Holding Out for a Hero.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if they can do something like that sort of shows the intricacies of local politics and how it affects people and do it in a way that's not just
that
wacky
contrasts
sitcom-y.
Why ours is shitty right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I'd be interested in seeing it.
Maybe it could be educational.
Yes.
The Good Doctor, Freddie Highmore, is a kid that is a child prodigy with occasionally, it seems like, crippling Asperger's. So, but a doctor takes a chance on him, played by Toby from The West Wing.
Okay.
Because he's just like on every show. That's another guy who's just like on everything. But he takes a chance on him and brings this prodigy in, and he's saving lives while struggling with how he socializes. Kind of like House, I guess, but in a less dickish way. For the People, that's just another like legal drama thing that's like helping out people. I don't know.
There should be shows about lawyers on TV.
Yeah, just skip that. The Crossing, however... this seemed like it's from the network that brought you Lost, and Steve Zahn is in this sci-fi adventure series, which I guess is going to have a lot of people like that cross over into our world from the future.
Okay.
And they just suddenly show up and they're there to like, because I guess it's fucked up in the future. It kind of sounds like The Travelers a little 12 bit.
Twelve Monkeys.
There's a lot of other shows that are kind of doing this thing. But it also seems like they're dropping into like a town that's full of peculiarities as well.
Here's the question. We got a lot of questions. We should take some notes. I'm going to cut out some letters and take some notes for next week.
Okay.
We got to ask Les if he's going to watch this show. Because you know Les loves time travel.
I want to watch it just because they said, from the network that brought you Lost.
From the network that brought you Lost.
And I was like, fair enough, you assholes.
You know what?
You had me at Lost.
You know what else? That show with the guardian angel from the network that brought you Lost.
So true. All right. And last from ABC, Roseanne's coming back. What do you guys think about this? They didn't actually, like, they didn't film anything new to show us. It was just like a montage of, this is what the show used to be.
I'm pretty firmly in the don't care camp. I don't...
Were you a big fan, Ashley?
I like the Roseanne show, but yeah, I'm kind of kind of the same situation. It's
yeah. It's not like an actively don't care. I literally have no opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I liked it. I liked Roseanne when it was on.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna watch it if it comes back. This is in the Fuller House camp for me.
Yeah, that's a good comparison, I would say.
Are they gonna call it Roseanner?
Roseanner.
Yeah,
well,
I don't
also,
know.
Didn't that series end and they were like, oh, we won the lottery. Never mind. It was all a dream.
Yeah, and I think they said they're going to address that.
Is that how Dan comes back? Because yeah. It was all a dream?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I thought that actually it was a dream that he lived at all.
Yeah.
Because he died after the first heart attack during Darlene's wedding.
Oh, maybe it's going to open with Dan in the shower and he's going to step out and be like, I'm alive. And also, I'm John Goodman naked.
And then he's going to have a heart attack.
He's going to have a heart attack and die. That's what Rick and Morty would do.
A third time?
Yes, that's how Rick and Morty would do it.
How many times must I die on this show? Okay, let's jump over to CBS real quick because they have a Young Sheldon, which is a spinoff of Big Bang Theory with their most popular character. The show looks fucking terrible. It's a young version of him living in East Texas. But I will say that the actor, the young little kid actor, is doing a dead-on impression.
That's great. This show is being made as a personal punishment for me is all I can assume. And
you
I also
don't
assume
have to watch it, dude.
I also assume that Kat Dennings is somehow going to be cast in it.
Oh, jeez. I'm so sorry.
I'm going to spend the next 6 months trying to find ways to trick you into accidentally watching it.
You're going
to
put in the credits for Northern Exposure? I'm like, oh, I love Northern Exposure.
Yeah, this won't be scary. Oh, my God. It's a Big Bang spinoff. You bitch! But like, I'll hide the remote, and it'll be like midnight. So you're not gonna get up to change the channel. You're gonna watch the whole episode.
This is a diabolical plan. You see, this is why I was upset. I knew that Ashley has some kind of diabolical plan.
I love it. So they also have some other shows that just did not interest me. They have a SWAT show and a SEAL team show, which are just, you know, police and
they have
and,
a SEAL team show too.
Yeah, it's called SEAL Team.
Oh,
and
is it actual SEALs?
Yeah, I wish that'd be a lot more interesting.
Because if it was actual SEALs, I'd be in.
It's a spinoff of Terriers. This is about dogs.
It's about dogs. It's about SEALs.
It's David Boreanaz from Angel and Bones. Man. He's a former SEAL, and he's like back home having trouble with it.
Good for that guy working, though, man. That guy has had a long TV career.
He bounces from big project to big project.
Yeah, good for him.
Making that money.
Yeah.
SWAT follows SWAT team in L.A., I guess.
You know what's interesting about this?
What?
I mean, nothing about watching the show, but the climate has changed a lot, and SWAT is not going to be... It's going to be real hard to get us on board the SWAT guys at this point.
Well, in the preview, right at the beginning, a white guy shoots a black kid accidentally.
Oh, jeez.
And that's like... the
ballsy,
start of it.
Ballsy to tackle it, I guess.
And then it shows like his buddy kind of who's the lead rushing in to like help save the kid and like put him in the car and drive him because the ambulance isn't gonna get there in time, whatever.
Because that happens with cops in LA all the time.
Yeah, yes. Ambulance can't get
let's save the black kid we accidentally shot. That happens all the time.
It does. It's mm-hmm. such a nope.
Uh-huh.
Me, myself, and I is a 3-time period study of a character, and this is what's his name? Bobby Moynihan as a middle-aged dude, John Larroquette as a little bit older version of him, and then there's a kid version of him, and it's like exploring his life and like all the points in his life that seemed shitty, I guess, for him.
That's interesting. It's comedy.
Yeah,
I like John Larroquette. I like Bobby Moynihan.
Mm-hmm.
It's it didn't have a laugh track as far as I could tell.
That's a good start.
But 9JKL did. It's about a son who gets a divorce, and so he moves back in with his next door to his parents and his brother, all in apartments 9JKL in a building. And it doesn't look good at all.
Also, what the hell kind of premise is that?
I don't know.
The saddest premise ever. That's more sad than Roseanne coming back.
It really is.
Yeah. Over at NBC, they have 2 trailers. One is for The Brave, and one is for Law and Order, The Menendez Brothers.
So I actually watched both of these.
Okay.
Law and Order, Menendez Brothers, the Law and Order True Crime. Obviously, I know what they're doing. It's because People versus OJ and the Jinx and how to get away with murder or whatever that one was called.
Yeah.
Making a murder and getting jinxed.
Falling, slipping on a banana peel.
Yes.
Something like that.
The true crime thing is hot and it makes sense. Law and Order is a good branding thing with it. But this trailer was so schlocky.
Oh, yeah.
And so over the top. It's like, you guys didn't pay attention to anything. You didn't look at anything that people like about these shows. You're just like, oh, let's make our own version of this. And then it's a terrible trailer for what's going to be a terrible show.
Let's put it into our NBC machine and see the shit that comes out.
The Brave looks like it appeals to the same part of my brain that watched that stupid movie Navy SEALs a few times.
Okay.
That I wouldn't do it now, but back when I was a younger kid, I used to watch Navy SEALs, and it was, and actually it's a fun movie to get your friends together and watch and laugh at. But the action rescue hostage stuff, the only gripe I have with it is it's so overwrought. It's so wears its heart on its sleeve. And of course the trailer gives away the entire pilot, just like The Blacklist, just like all these suspense shows they do. There's a market for these shows, but why do they give away every twist in the trailer? You don't need that to sell the show.
Yeah, I don't know. It didn't seem interesting to me.
No, I won't watch it.
Fox is our last one we're going to take a look at here. And I thought that they were in contention with ABC for having at least some mildly interesting stuff.
Yeah.
You guys got to see Ghosted, Ghosted, which has... Yep. Who are these guys?
Craig Robinson and Adam Scott.
Adam Scott and Craig Robinson. And they are basically guys that are some schlubs that get recruited into some paranormal agency to kind of investigate stuff.
Very Men in Black.
Or BPRD or something.
Yeah. And I think Ash and I had the same reaction to these trailer was like, I like these guys. Why isn't this better?
Yeah, I mean... I have enough goodwill towards both of them that I'm going to give it a shot.
Yeah.
But a little bit on the same basis as you were kind of talking about earlier, where, I mean, I know that there's a lot of bad TV out there, but there's a lot of good TV too. And cutting those trailers just must be hard or something.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a shot.
Yeah, me too. But the trailer's terrible.
Yeah.
There's something about this, and maybe it's because both these guys have popped up, I think, in Brooklyn Nine-Nine that I was like, okay, if it's coming from Fox and... You know, it has that kind of sensibility. I was amused by a couple of the jokes. A lot of them were not that funny, but it could just be context that's built up in an episode versus how they deliver in a trailer.
Do you remember the upfront trailer for Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
Not really.
It wasn't good.
Well, that makes sense.
There was no indication of how good it was going to be. It looked like you're watching and you're thinking, I like all these people, but can Andy Samberg really carry a show? Like, is this going to work? The only thing is, that show had Mike Schur behind the scenes. I don't know who's running Ghosted.
Yeah. LA to Vegas also is kind of running in this vein. It is about a group of that are on a plane that's constantly flying between LA and Vegas.
What if it never stops? They have to like jump out. Like it's constantly flying between
it's
LA
like
and Vegas.
It's like the Langoliers or
yes,
some shit.
Yeah, exactly.
No rest, guys. None.
See, that's a show. I can see how that's a show. I don't see how a show about the pilots and stewardesses and guests aboard a shuttle flight from LA to Vegas. I can see how that's a movie. How is that a TV show?
I mean, I don't know. I watched this trailer and I was like, I'm kind of amused by a little bit of it.
It's all right.
It feels like they have an idea of who these characters are and how they'll play off of each other, which is a good sign to have up front, at least.
That's a weird setting for an ongoing show.
I would think that it would break out occasionally into the airport as well, but it might not stray too far from that. I wouldn't think
granted, it never lands.
Home.
It never lands.
I love that idea. I love it. But this is that's a mid-season release, as well as this medical drama called The Resident, which medical drama...
There should be shows about doctors on TV.
Ugh, that one's skip. But the last one I want to discuss with you guys is The Orville, which is Seth MacFarlane's take on Star Trek. I guess we could also talk about the Star Trek trailer here as well. We can kind of touch back on it again. So he's doing this comedic take, but it's not...
The weird thing is...
It's not Galaxy Quest.
It's not Galaxy Quest. It's not fully comedic. It's an hour-long show. So there is going to be some seriousness. Like, the missions and things are actually, I think, going to have... It's not all boing, goofy, Spaceballs type stuff. It's Seth MacFarlane can't resist doing jokes, but he obviously clearly loves Star Trek.
Yeah.
So the thing about this is it looks really good. Like, the ships look good and the sets, and it's got Adrienne Palicki in it, and I love her. And
kind of liked a little bit of their chemistry there.
I thought their weird alien who's sort of their straight man alien was kind of interesting. Like, there is potential here, but the jokes are all, like, really lame.
Yeah, him doing, like, one with an alien about, like, marital problems and whether or not you leave the toilet seat up.
Yeah.
It was just like, why did you write that into an episode?
Yeah.
Was there nothing more creative you could come up with there?
And I think Seth MacFarlane, he's always just like, you know that his instinct is kind of like Kevin Smith. His instinct is always to go for the poop joke.
His ego, I think, just shines in everything that he does when he's on screen. Yeah. I don't think I like him as an actor because I think he's just so smarmy that I'm like, fuck off, dude.
But, you know, he's only a couple steps away from like Joel McHale.
Yeah, but
If Joel McHale was in this show, I'd be much more interested.
Joel McHale has an ability to humble himself about things occasionally. That's true. I mean, he's not always the dick. He'll make himself look like an idiot as well. That's true. Where, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just too much swagger to Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah, although, you know, Tim Allen played the captain in Galaxy Quest. You need too much swagger occasionally. So it might work.
Tim Allen's good, though. He earns his big bucks.
Oh, God.
I think you don't like him personally.
My prediction is this show is either going to be surprisingly good or awful. There will be no in between. There's not going to be like, oh, it's all right. No, it's going to be really, oh, this is really good. Or, wow, that was the shittiest thing they've ever put on TV.
Yeah.
I don't see mediocrity for it. I think it's going to soar or crash.
So upfronts overall?
Oh, so let's talk about the upfronts.
Okay.
Because I have a letter that I'm writing by cutting out letters from newspapers.
You have a lot of time on your hands.
I do. So I think that there's a few rules for people making upfront trailers. One, you guys can't have any more pop music until you've learned how to use it. So we're taking all the pop music away. You also can't have sappy orchestral music because you overuse that as well. No bouncy music. I guess no music is my message. Until you've learned how to use the tools, you cannot have the tools. So dead silence is what you get. No sound effects, by God. No more sound effects.
Boink.
None of that. None of that. None of it. All gone. Silence, no sound effects, no music. You may use
what
the show.
What about Aruga? Can they have that
that's
one?
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one. Okay. That actually only transitions between trailers. That's the end and the beginning of every trailer. It is the season premiere and season finale of every Lost episode.
Now I'm nervous, though, because if that's all Seth MacFarlane has, I feel like there's going to be a lot of Aruga-ing in my future.
Too many Arugas.
Also, no more giving away the big twist in your fucking trailer.
Well, I mean, yeah, also note that this is marketing to ad agencies and not necessarily like the general public can also kind of get it.
But that's the thing. But they're not, they need to adjust. This used to just go to advertisers. And so you were not trying to sell your show to people who are going to watch it. You were trying to sell your show to people who are like, oh, I can see people being interested in that. It was all very, very abstract. This is now, you have to be thinking about the audience you're aiming it for, which is not just advertisers, but the audience.
See, that's the other weird thing. I'm like, maybe like the people who have ad money that they're trying to market this to are fucking corny losers. And that's why they make these trailers really bad. They're like, no, don't put all the good jokes in there. Just make some shit because that's all those people want to see. They want something that feels comfortable and safe. We can't have any of the fun, edgy stuff in it.
Holy shit, you just figured it out.
You think that's what it is?
Well, look at TV advertising. It's all terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is.
They're like, I could see that just being a nice, safe show that I could put whatever on.
Yeah, you're right. That's what it is. It's the upfronts aren't for us.
Ugh.
Yeah.
It's for them, by them.
Yes.
Fitbit.
Fitbit.
The lamer brand.
Aruga.
All right, well, let's take a break and talk about some TV. So we're going to be talking about the first season of Dear White People over on Netflix, and then we're going to be wrapping up with me raving about Leftovers, as usual.
And me trying to make it sound as ridiculous as possible for Ashley, who's never seen a moment.
I'm looking forward to it.
I should warn you, there's nothing as exciting as the Lion sex cult.
Okay, and I should warn you that in addition to Twin Peaks, I have seen other things David Lynch has done, so you have your work cut out for yourself, sir.
Fair.
Well, you guys were able to check out Dear White People, so you guys give us a rundown. What do you think?
I really liked this.
Yeah, I loved it. So I guess it is a series that basically follows, it takes place at an Ivy League college, at a dorm that is definitely predominantly, but almost entirely African-American.
Yeah.
And it kind of follows, each episode focuses on a different student at this college, all of them Black. And just kind of their experience.
Well, and it centers around a blackface party thrown by this National Lampoon style magazine.
Yeah, so it starts there. Yeah, that's how the series opens.
And they keep going back to it. It's like a central event.
Yeah, for sure.
And they do move the plot line forward, but the first like four episodes, it's all like a flashback to how these people in those days before and after that, what this character was up to.
Mm-hmm.
I thought watching this, I've never seen the movie. And I wanted to watch it, but I had this feeling like maybe this was going to be like homework TV. Like I was going to be watching it because I felt like it was important to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But then you said it was really funny.
Oh yeah, it's super funny. And it's hilarious.
And I sat down to watch it, and I binged the whole thing in like 2 days.
I did
like,
the same thing too.
It's very watchable and very funny, and the characters are great. Like this is a fantastic cast.
Yeah, you know, it's... I mean, from the title, obviously, there's a lot of kind of social kind of commentary and aspect to it. And I thought that that was going to be much heavier and that it was going to really focus around maybe real event, like fictionalized real events or something like that. I didn't really know what to expect. I haven't seen the movie either.
Yeah.
But I kind of felt like, yeah, it was a full-blown page turner. Like when because they're only like half hour episodes. Yeah. So when one would end, I'd be like, oh shit. And I'd start the next one because I wanted to know what happened.
Yeah. Same.
It was super funny. I loved everyone in it.
Favorite character?
Oh, my favorite character. I like Lionel.
Yeah.
He is a character. He writes for the school paper. He's kind of a nerd, super introverted.
Yep.
So kind of one thing that me and Randy were kind of talking about is that, you know, unfortunately, most television is full of white people.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there is a Black character, there's one.
And they've got to represent every... So you've got to be kind of careful. You can't make them... you can't make them that interesting because they have to represent the entire Black experience in one character.
Yeah, and they're written by a white person.
Usually,
and there's just like, and they're just there to kind of be the sidekick friend.
Yeah.
It's usually like, you know, a person of color plays like a secondary character. And so one really cool thing about this series is that it follows each of the characters at least once, but some of the more central characters multiple times. And they're all kind of handling the experience just like you would think as mm-hmm. round people in very different ways. And this guy is, he kind of has a hard time fitting in. He's a nerd. He is rooming with his roommate, a super hot, like built guy who's involved in student government.
Who's also, I mean, they kind of call him like the Obama. He's the guy who's like running for student council.
Yeah.
And, the thing
his
about
his dad is the dean.
Lionel being sort of the nerdy guy and all these, and all this cool, like I can't relate to that. Cause I'm like a pretty cool guy.
That's true. Yeah. I started talking to you because of your pecs.
Yeah.
I was like, man, that guy, he would be like the Obama in our group.
Yeah.
But maybe he has like a nerdy roommate.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I figured.
But I felt like I could sort of relate to Lionel a little
bit. I also felt like I could relate to Lionel.
But then the reveal that he was gay, and I'm like, okay, well, not entirely, or wait, maybe there's something I need to have discovered about myself in watching this episode.
Well, you're not going to know unless you try it.
But I did think the thing, there's a great scene with him where he's like, listening to his roommate have sex.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we just described what his roommate looks like, so he pulls a lot of tail.
And I thought... I wasn't sure if he was at that point, if he was fascinated about his roommate. Like I thought maybe, because the way they shot it, it sort of looks like, okay, it is his roommate that he's into and whether he's gay or if he was sort of the wishing that he was the popular good looking guy and was imagining what it was like to be with this woman.
And
very quickly they make clear what it is.
Yeah. Real quickly they
but,
clear
but
that,
at first
that
I was
up.
Like, oh, well, that's interesting. They're doing sort of a jealousy kind of thing. But then is when he Google searches the very specific, it's almost like a fantasy thing. He like he types in the Google like what if you jerk off to your black roommate who looks like Superman?
Are you gay?
It's like, yeah, wow, that was real specific.
It comes up. It like auto finishes. Yeah, he's like, wow, that is strangely specific.
Yeah, and that cracked me up.
And so one really awesome thing about his character is that you really kind of see this person who looked and seemed so lost kind of come into his own, to the extent that he goes to this drama party in a few episodes later. And he kind of gets picked up by this couple, a boy and a girl, and like taken home. And he starts kind of making out with the boy. And then the girl starts just, you know, kind of talking sexy to him and stuff. And he just kind of calls the whole thing off and starts cracking up. Like, so this dude's obviously gay and you're in love with him and can't break up with him because you don't want to be alone. And and he just gets up and walks out and is just like a different person after that.
Yeah. Well, his whole story arc is he becomes kind of a badass.
Yeah, he does. He becomes a total badass. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I don't know how much of detail towards the end of the season we want to go into, but he really comes out the hero at the end.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think he's probably, he's probably my favorite character.
I agree. Lionel's my favorite character as well. I also, really liked Samantha, who's our lead.
Yes.
She's the Dear White. She has the show Dear White People, and she's,
it's a radio show where basically, it's an open letter to white people that makes constant good points, obviously.
I actually audibly gasped when they revealed that she had a white boyfriend. I was like, that was a good reveal. I was like,
yeah,
oh,
I was not expecting that either.
And they did a good job with that character because he's a little douchey on occasion. Like, he's trying a little too hard. Like, he's got all the, he had the Josephine Baker poster and the Malcolm X autobiography or the biography.
He really wants to be an ally. Like, and he is.
And he is.
I mean, and honestly, I can relate to him.
Oh,
like, I want to be an ally, but I'm, we're all trying
but
too
it was
hard.
It was occasionally a little cringy when he's in there and I'm like, dude,
God,
you should not be here. And to his credit, the character usually knows when to just shut up. Like, you're not, you should not be here saying anything. You can listen, and even that's a little intrusive.
Yeah, and they're really sympathetic to every character. So they follow him one day.
Yeah.
And you kind of get a sense that sometimes he gets annoyed, like everyone doesn't think he's earned what he's received because he's like this white cis straight male.
Yep.
And they kind of sympathetically kind of call that out. And I don't know. I really liked it. That was good.
I also thought I like Coco.
Coco is really cool. So a little bit to what we were talking about earlier, where it's like, you know, finally there's a show where there can be these round characters. Not, I mean, of course, they don't all agree on what the, you know, air quote black experience is and how to best move society to a more equitable place. And they all have different approaches to it.
Yeah.
And Coco's is one kind of, I'd say, assimilation.
I was going to say she and Troy both are sort of more okay with like, let's try and work within the system. Let's go, you know, kind of the Obama route, the let's be, let's try to talk to everybody and, you know, not be apologetic about being black, but at the same time, not be quite as in your face as someone like Samantha, or Reggie. And
And they get criticized for it, and I totally get it.
And we're set up to think both of them are kind of, especially because the first episode is from Sam's point of view, to think, okay, Troy and Coco are going to be kind of the villains of the piece.
Right.
And then when we see more of them, especially Coco, like Coco's set up to be sort of a mean girl, basically.
Yeah, and some, I mean, I wouldn't be comfortable saying, like some racial slurs associated with, you know, African-Americans that are catering too much to white people are kind of tossed around their direction and things of that sort. And I kind of felt like the episode where we follow Coco, to your point, was really powerful just to watch this person who has experienced a lot of trauma try to find the best way. And one of the kind of social issues that is really heavily explored is a cop pulling a gun on one of these students,
and
who
it's done
a
really
black
well.
Man, it's done really well. And Coco's point is kind of like, I told you guys so. Like, if you're dead, like, how woke are you if you're dead?
Yeah.
Like we can't, and you get it. You
I
get
thought
it
that
instantly.
Was, yeah, that was a really good, that was, it was one of those things that really hits you. Like, if you haven't, if you've never thought about it, it really hits you at that point. I mean, there's something, I've considered that kind of thing before, but to see it sort of laid out that way in fiction was really, really effective.
Yeah.
And I love the reveal of Coco and Samantha's past.
Yeah, that's really great. That like,
I love everybody in the show. I also what's her current best friend, Samantha's current best friend, who sort of talks with Gabe about her crush on Reggie. I really liked her. She was sort of a smaller character, but I really liked that character, and I'm blanking on her name.
Is it Joelle Brooks?
Yes. Yeah, that's it.
Played by Ashley Featherston.
Yep. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't know she was named Ashley. I don't like her anymore.
Yeah, I have a soft spot. You know, we're just out there in the world making it a better place.
Yeah, no, I liked her too. I thought she was a good character. And we didn't mention that it's narrated, the opening and maybe the closing, I think it's mostly the opening, has this sort of
every episode
somewhat sardonic overview of where the show is. It's done by Giancarlo Esposito, and he's perfect for it.
Yeah, he does this really good job.
Yeah. But this is a great show, and it gets into a lot of things that, like, it's about the school experience and that kind of thing too. But it's much more universal than you might think. It's not, you know, if you are a white person, it is definitely still for you. Even though it's not made for you, yeah. You should watch this because it's really, really interesting and funny.
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was great. I love all of the stuff that they tackle. It's really funny. Yeah. I mean, the storylines are surprising. There's really so much to recommend it. And it does do a really good job of kind of representing, I feel like, where society is and a little bit holding a mirror up to it.
Yeah.
For people who might even her white boyfriend, like,
yeah.
And in some ways, I think some of the stuff that, like, it would be like, oh, God, why? But it's like, I was like, oh. Okay, yeah, I could see myself do the same, stepping in it in that fashion, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Trying to be an ally and failing.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot to it, but I mean, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And I think that would be the last thing I would say is that it's really funny and really well written.
Yeah, this was super enjoyable, and I'm glad I binged through it.
So you ready to talk a little bit about this week's leftovers?
I don't really have anything to say.
How many lions were in it?
Just one truly beautiful, tragic lion.
What color was his mane? Was it pink?
Her mane.
What?
Amy Brenneman. Her hair is like a mane of a lion, right?
That's true, yes.
This was a Laurie episode. This was episode 6 of 8 episodes we get. There's only 2 more left.
I know.
Next week's the penultimate.
I know.
And you know Lindelof and his penultimate. But this episode was called Certified. And yeah, it explored Lori, and we start off in the beginning with a flashback to when she was still a therapist, and she's talking to the lady who actually was in the very first scene of the episode, the mom who loses her baby in the car.
Yep.
The baby disappears.
I thought it was interesting to see that character again.
Yeah, it was nice, kind of a little nod back to her. And we even see, like, the backs of two ladies in white later from the what is it, Guilty Remnant? The
Guilty
GR?
Remnant, yeah.
And I was like, oh, is that the lady who got stoned? But we never see the front of the face. It would be a weird cameo, I think. But yeah, we get to see this flashback to her kind of talking to this lady. And this is where you first see Lori kind of detach, start processing her grief in a truly tragic way that, like, has her just say, I don't know how to help you. I don't have the answer to this anymore. This is beyond me. And we see that Lori is suicidal. She takes all those pills. She writes a suicide note. She's ready to give up on everything.
Yep.
Like, it was a heartbreaking scene and made somewhat comedic by her, like going and switching and trying to adjust different ways where she wants to be found with a suicide note before ultimately that puking scene. And was it you that was talking about, like, we have a lot of these projectile vomit scenes?
No, it wasn't me, but I did notice this. That was some real vomiting. Like, I don't know if she just put a bunch of stuff in her mouth. I almost started wondering, like, are they CGing all this? Because that's a big commitment.
It could be.
It didn't look CG.
Or she could have vomited that. Yeah. I don't know how they did that shot, but I would imagine, like, usually they have a tube to the side. You know, so
I don't know how they would have managed
the timing
that one.
Of
it. And, I don't know.
Yeah. It was really sick. Really,
it was gross.
Terrible.
It was very gross.
I was just fascinated by, like, this is such a heartbreaking episode.
Yeah.
Have you cried at all watching this show?
No.
Not once?
Nope.
Me neither.
Yeah, but you're a robot.
I'm a robot.
I'm the thing is, Lindelof's...
You're not emotionally attached to this.
No, I'm not emotionally attached. Lindelof is somewhat emotionally distant. It's a Kubrick kind of thing. Like, Stanley Kubrick stuff doesn't really draw me in either. There's a certain coldness to it that doesn't draw me in. I'm not... I cried at Lost. Like, when Sawyer and Juliet got together at the end, I cried at that.
Oh. I never cried at... Yeah, I don't cry at anything.
You're a robot.
But, you know, I know a lot of people said they cried at this episode, especially at the end when, like, she's on the phone with her kids.
Yeah, I'm not emotionally attached to this show.
And, you know, anyone listening, we're going to spoil stuff, obviously.
Yeah.
But let me get to the big question then.
Yes.
She kills herself, right?
I'm not sure.
Really?
To be honest, I kind of lost the thread in this episode. I was drifting in and out. I wasn't super into it.
Oh, you weren't as engaged.
I was not.
Well,
but
I mean, how could she not? That's a whole buildup. Yeah, it ends in silence to like really emphasize that she takes Nora's suggestion of like how she could kill herself without like making anyone else think that she committed suicide.
Right.
She goes scuba diving and all she has to do is adjust the air underwater and it'll be like, oh, what a freak accident that killed her.
Yeah.
So that's what she ends up kind of embracing. Yeah. But you see kind of her journey to... Lori is shown as like very rational and very controlling. Everyone else is constantly freaking out and she just wants to be this voice of reason.
Yep.
And when she joined the GR initially, it was because she was letting go of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
She couldn't handle it anymore because she didn't have the answers for herself. And so she just had a break. And what ended up bringing her back from that was ultimately Jill and Kevin and, you know, going beyond the pale with like how terrible they could be to everyone else.
Yep.
But, you know, she eventually kind of crawls back from that, back to her old self who's there to try and provide therapy to people, like help them dealing with the impossible to deal with. And I think it's interesting that she gets to a point where she's like, you know, I don't have to do that anymore. If when she goes and finds Kevin Garvey Jr. And that his dad and the Australian lady and John all want him to basically kill himself as like a sacrifice in their crazy belief that he will go into some underworld and stop a great flood from coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's crazy, but it's like their faith driving this idea that like he can be some sort of savior.
Yeah.
She's no longer trying to control that. She's like, if you want to do it, you do whatever you're going to do. You know,
here's the thing about Lori that bugs me.
Yeah.
There's suicidal because of depression and that's a whole other thing. Her suicidal seems very controlled and sort of deliberate. And I feel like given that she's had two husbands and two kids that hers is particularly selfish. I mean, feel like she makes a deliberate decision like that.
But she's not trying to burden anyone with her committing suicide. She's just leaving.
Right. But I mean, John,
she has no dependents anymore.
She has John. She's like, they've built a new life together and she's just going to leave him behind now.
Well, they
just
have
like
that...
she did with Kevin and Jill. And I mean,
but they had that conversation where it's like, I thought it was kind of clearly they're propping each other up in a way, but he very much has a different set of values and a different thing he needs to get in order to get over his grief.
Yeah.
And it's not the same for her. And she could be the nag who's constantly like wagging her finger and telling him not to, but
he might kind of need that.
But ultimately, she shouldn't have to be his parent if they're in that relationship. And I think it's similar to Kevin and Nora in that they're like in this toxic codependent relationship.
Yeah,
but you know, ultimately, she realizes she doesn't need that anymore.
I think that's what's disconnecting me from Leftovers is that I like to think of myself as kind of a cynic, but when it comes to romance and relationship stuff, I'm not. And
these are all broken people.
Nora and Kevin had gotten to a place of sort of equilibrium to some extent, and they keep falling apart. And I'm like, okay, so what I thought was sort of the two of them sort of saving each other is just codependent, terrible bullshit. And it's not fun for me to watch.
Oh.
And well, it's too dark. Like Leftovers is really too dark for me.
It is a super dark show.
Well, season two I thought had gotten a little lighter.
Yeah.
And season three has swerved right back into that darkness, which I think might be a mistake.
Well, I mean, where I'm thinking this is heading,
yeah,
is going to be bleak.
The end of the world?
Well, no, I think it's going to be sort of saving the world, but, you know, at an expense of a lot of people we care about dying, right? And that was what was great about season two ending, because ultimately in season two, and I think I'm using the word ultimately a lot, you have Kevin, like, wandering listless, and he finds the one thing he truly wants, which is family, and he gets it, and he feels complete with that.
Yeah.
But that's not really what he wants, because we see in season three, he's back to, you know, feeling this emptiness and this pain.
I think that's what it was, is that I liked season two. I liked where it left off.
It ends beautifully.
And I kind of didn't want to see the story beyond that. So for me, I kind of think I wanted it to end with season two, where it was like, not ideal, but like on a note of hope. And I don't think that's where we're going. And it's not certainly not the direction of this season.
I mean, like, with Lori, basically, I guess we could say gone.
Probably, yes.
It's already a bleak outlook at the end.
I'll say this. I'm glad that Nora finally got the chance to punch Lori, accidental or not. Because she calls her out for, like, you put mannequins of my family in my house.
Yeah.
Like, they've never really addressed that Laura really, like, terrorized Nora.
Yeah.
And they've never really addressed that. They've been circling each other for this long. And so whether or not it was an accident that she punched her in the face, I'm not entirely convinced it was.
And she was also being a dick and fucking with Lori.
She deserved it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm glad that Nora got her slight revenge.
I mean, just seeing those two in the scene together, too.
Yeah, both. I mean, Amy Brenneman and Carrie Coon together. Yeah, I'd watch that no matter how depressing the show is.
I mean, we're having... I with the last two episodes, I would assume it's going to be Kevin and it's going to be Nora, and seeing what happens with both of them. Nora is going to go into some experimental machine, or she's going to try. I don't know. Like, they already rejected her, so how does she, like, just kind of swing in there and be like, I'm still taking it? They're going to be like, no.
She's going to run in and push all the buttons and jump in front of it.
But I don't know. I like Matt being there kind of by her side.
Yeah. I always forget the two of them are related.
Yeah.
That they're brother and sister. Like, and then they'll be together and they'll say something. I'm like, okay, right. What if the final episode is from the point of view of the smoke monster?
Yes! A tie-in! There was something, was it this week or last week? There was something that I was like, is there a tie-in between this? Oh, with the French guy maybe pushing the button?
Oh, yeah.
There's a great part where they're around that table talking about the French guy who detonates this.
Yeah, they told us why the naked French dude launched nuclear missiles. Because
he thought there was some egg under the earth that would release this Godzilla, or he had to kill this Godzilla.
He had to kill Godzilla.
And they're all laughing about how irrational that is. Well, they're also talking about how they have to drown Kevin so he can be the savior to stop a flood, so that Kevin Sr. can do a rain dance song. Yep. It's like, that's also crazy.
No, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like where this is building up to for Kevin is that he would die and maybe see Lori. I would think he would see a lot of his loved ones in this sort of hotel afterlife again.
Yeah.
If that happens. And maybe he does something, maybe he doesn't, that might save things. Yeah. But whatever. I don't know. I think I would like it to end on an optimistic note.
I don't expect it to
be. I think it's whatever it's going to be, it's going to be bittersweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was a very emotionally heavy, I thought, episode, even though robot, you know.
Robots don't cry.
And you don't care. Yeah. But it's sad to see her character go. Maybe we'll see her in one more little flash.
We might. We might.
Because
episode 10 is all about under the sea. Episode 8. Yeah, the final episode is all about Lori living under the sea as a mermaid.
She becomes a mermaid.
Yeah, exactly. Happy ending.
That was never her dream, but that was my dream.
Yes.
I like it. That's beautiful. All right. Well, we're going to believe in that sort of fan retcon there. She's a mermaid.
If we don't see her again, that's canon.
I mean, this is Lindelof. He's building up to potentially a side universe, just like in Lost, where people are able to confront their loss and their pain and you know, do some serious adulting.
You know what, Grant? I'm going to make a bold prediction.
Yeah?
There's a bunch of rain coming. There's going to be a flood the earth.
Mm-hmm.
The surprise ending, they're all mermaids.
Yeah. All right.
If it's not contradicted, that's canon.
This could be the greatest television show of all time. We're going to end it there. Ashley, you haven't seen this show. What did you think of that conversation? Weird?
Yeah, I guess it started out with some suicides, went to a Disney show, but there may or may not be some biblical references and a lion. Heavy-handed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, she got it.
Okay, yeah, okay. Well, Randy, so you don't like anything too dark?
The weird thing is I do sometimes...
Did you like Black Mirror?
Cause it's, I love Black Mirror.
Okay, because it's real good, but that's dark as fuck.
Yeah, he doesn't like sad dark.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I don't know.
Melancholy.
Melancholy maybe I don't like, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't like melons or collies.
I mean, I don't generally like melancholy, but I find that the surreal sci-fi aspect of this just melds perfectly with it, that I'm game for whatever.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It lets you spin up your speculative brain.
And I don't need happy, positive characters or a fulfilling relationship that is actually successful, I guess.
I guess usually with my dark stuff, I like dark humor.
Yeah.
Even like something like Hannibal that's pretty dark. And Black Mirror.
Yeah.
There's a sort of dark sense of humor that runs through it.
Yeah.
Leftovers has a little bit of that, but it is somewhat, maybe it's too sincerely dark.
Yeah.
Oh, so these are going to turn into the kind of mermaids that like lure sailors.
Yeah, goth mermaids.
Goth mermaids, yeah.
the bad girls of the sea.
Oh, yeah. Do you think their favorite movie is going to be The Crow?
All right, Ashley, Randy, thank you guys. And thank you, listeners. We are out for the week. We will be back next week with less to talk. A bunch of stuff that I should have watched this week.
Kimmy Schmidt, Kimmy Schmidt and Twin Peaks.
Kimmy Schmidt.
Kimmy Schmidt.
Oh, no.
Kimmy Schmidt and Goth Mermaids.
TV News out. The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter @TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.